Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, here we go. Second hour. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just joining us, lots to come, including an audio cut of the day. Bernie Goldberg, BernardGoldberg.com. Longtime journalist, correspondent on HBO's Real Sports, wrote a book 20 years ago. I'll ask him about that. I think it was about 20 years ago. Bias, exposing media bias, really, I think, on a large scale for the first time. And it's interesting because he was a bit of a pioneer when it comes to exposing that. And he's doing it once again. There are things that get on Bernie's nerves, just like me and many of you. And he's pretty good at calling them out. And he wrote a column about some of the nonsense that Brian Stelter and CNN is doing. And one thing you should know about Bernie Goldberg is he's not even, I don't think, the biggest Trump guy, but he also sees the unfairness that exists in much of the media, as do I. So we'll have him coming up here in a little bit. Here's something that I think is interesting. So I went on Dave Klein, birthday boy. You've got three kids. You going to do Disney Plus? Absolutely, right? You signed up today. Did you try to use it? Because I tried to use it, and the first few times I could not get in with the app, but then finally it loaded and I saw the content. Look, I subscribe to way too many things. My entertainment budget is outrageous because I have Hulu and Amazon and HBO, everything. I can't think of anything that I really don't have. And the Disney thing for me is not only interesting because I do have a little one, but because of the original content. And I'll tell you what, man, I don't even know what it's called. The new Star Wars. I didn't even know they were doing this. Did you know this? I'm watching Monday Night Football. By the way, best football game of the year last night, 49ers and Seahawks. And during halftime, they say, well, we're going to have a, because Disney owns ESPN and, you know, everybody's all in the family, we're going to have a preview of the new Star Wars series that Jon Favreau is directing. And it was fascinating. It really looked good. And I looked, a couple of the reviews were very positive. So that hooked me right there. But the reason I bring this up is, and we're going to talk about this in a few minutes, is Netflix and Hulu. Raise your hand out there. And if you're my parents listening in suburban Chicago, they will raise their hand. If you are using your son, daughter, mom, dad, sister, brother, their password. So you don't have a Netflix account, but you're signing in as that person, right? People do it all the time. I just expose my mother and father because they have my Netflix password. But maybe not for much longer because Netflix, Disney, and others say they're going to crack down on password sharing because these streaming wars are here to stay. This is not going away. This is the future. Not unlike challenges that we have in my business on the radio side, television, live television has some pretty big challenges moving forward outside of live sports. You have 150 million subscribers on Netflix, but what happens when they crack down on passwords? And here's my question. This is what we're going to find out here from Joan Salzman from CNET, is how are they going to do that? We were talking about this. We had a little station meeting earlier. How in the world will they stop people from sharing passwords? Well, there's going to be a plan, and we'll talk about it here in just a couple of minutes. Let me talk about the weather yesterday, just briefly. We did talk about this on KMOX Overtime this morning. This is Bob Becker with MoDOT, and they're taking heat, if you will, maybe not the right word, for the condition of the highways yesterday. And here's what he said.
We did our best for what we knew about. Yes, it wasn't our best day, and I wish it would have been better, but, you know, for the conditions and what we knew about, we did our best.
I guess he says that there was another burst of snow, and I don't know about where you live, but in the Fenton area, the High Ridge area where I live, on my deck, there was at least 2 inches. I would say 2.5 inches. So in certain parts, and you had Anti-Road, which is not too far from where I live, and 44 was shut down because of the conditions. But I guess he said, he's the MoDOT district engineer, Bob Becker, says they did not expect the blast that they got around 3 p.m. So they were a little unsure of that, and he says they would have put down heavier treatment down, but they're careful not to waste money putting treatment down that's not necessary. Bob Becker probably shouldn't have said what he said because now they're going to get hammered every time something happens like this. But I guess my perspective is a little different. I would have liked to have done maybe a little bit better job, and I did hear that 6440 was worse than some of the other highways. I took 55 home last night. I have options of going 44 or 55, and I heard about the 44 closure, so I took 55. It was fine. No problems. Got on northbound 270, though, and as I was getting on the ramp, it was a little slick. I hit the brakes a couple of times. I could tell that there was some skidding. So where it may have looked like it was just wet in some locations, and I'm certainly not averse to making fun of St. Louis drivers who panic even if there's snow in the forecast, I do think that there was a black ice situation and some people were just caught off guard. I bring it up from this perspective, and this certainly, I think, happens not only in Missouri. There seemingly is this expectation that no matter how much snow we get, whether it's a half inch or an inch or two or three or whatever, that the roads are going to be perfect, in perfect condition for everyone. And that I wouldn't say that the area should be paralyzed by a small storm. But if you get a bunch of snow happening and it's in, you know, kind of a quick hit fashion and it's very, very cold, I think yesterday would have been very different if the temperatures wouldn't have plummeted to in the 20s, because we had 60s over the weekend. The ground was pretty warm. So it should not have been an issue, but the temperatures got very cold. I don't know. I guess I'm teeing off on people's expectations, because we're not going to have a situation where everything's going to be perfect when it's snowing during a snowstorm. Now, after, that's another story, whether it's cleaned up properly. The one thing that I'll tell you from my days in the People's Republic of Wisconsin is they did a very good job of cleaning up the snow after the snowfall. But even during a snowfall, whether it was 5 inches or 6 inches, look, we had big snows up there, you still had congestion and difficulty and ice and all that stuff. But once the snow stops, you can really get to the clearing and the de-icing and all that stuff. But it's going to be slick. It's going to be tricky when it's snowing. And yeah, some people are bad drivers and some people drive too fast for conditions. But the expectation that everything's going to be perfect, I think, is a little unrealistic. I do want to talk about Don Cherry just quickly, too. Don Cherry is a legendary hockey announcer. If you follow hockey, you might know who he is. You might know him for his strange outfits. If you Google Don Cherry, you'll see a bunch of flamboyant, colorful outfits. He's been on the air for 40 years. And when he was on an episode of something called Coach's Corner, talking about Veterans Day, he went off on Canadians and, in particular, immigrants, because they, in his estimation, don't follow tradition by wearing poppies to honor fallen soldiers, something they do in Canada, and they wear these little pins that have a flower to recognize the veterans.
You know, I was talking to a veteran. I said, I'm not going to run the poppy thing anymore, because what's the sense? I live in Mississauga. Nobody wears, very few people wear a poppy. Downtown Toronto, forget it, downtown Toronto, nobody wears a poppy. And I'm not going to, he says, wait a minute. How about running it for the people that buy them? Now, you go to the small cities, and you know those, the rows on rows, you people love, you they come here, whatever.
All right, hang on. That's where you got into trouble. Listen to this part right here. That's the most important part, and I think you're going to get it.
You people love, you they come here, whatever it is. You love our way of life. You love our milk and honey. At least you could pay a couple of bucks for poppies or something like that. These guys pay for your way of life that you enjoy in Canada. These guys paid the biggest price. Anyhow, I'm going to run it again for you great people and good Canadians that bought a poppy. I'm still going to run it anyhow.
All right, so he's 85 years old. He is addressing immigrants that don't care about veterans, and he says, you people. They fire him right away. He's been a mainstay in hockey. Now, I've talked to some people about this, and Don Cherry does have a history of saying things that are somewhat offensive, apparently, and some people think it was just a matter of time for this to happen. But he's not, I like this. He's not apologizing. He's not backing down. He said what he said. I think some of this is a bit generational, the way that he is speaking. And I'm just amazed, because it seems rather innocuous to me. And they gave him a harsh boot. And even his broadcast partner, who basically didn't think there was anything wrong at the time, came out and hammered Don Cherry. Let's just keep one thing in mind here. The Prime Minister of Canada wore blackface, but because he's young and good-looking, he gets a complete pass. Meantime, Don Cherry gets fired.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
So I guess I knew I was going to eventually sign up for Disney Plus, because I have a 4.5-year-old and I'm a fan of the Disney products. But then I watched Monday Night Football last night, and they had this extended trailer for The Mandalorian. I don't know what it is. I'm kind of a guy who focuses on movies and entertainment, and I had not heard about this live-action Star Wars series. So when I first heard about the preview, they were pitching to it, and I'm like, okay, what is this going to be like? Because they, you know, not all the Star Wars projects have been great. Oh, it looked awesome. Jon Favreau is the director. It looks really cool. So I signed up this morning. Now, when I first signed up, could not get online or through the app. It said, you know, retry later. They were having some glitches, I think well-documented on Twitter. But I did finally get in, and I want to talk a little bit about Disney Plus and also about password sharing this afternoon, because I think it's an interesting topic, because, as I mentioned earlier, I have been known, and I think many of you out there have been known to share your password with family members or friends. And they're going to crack down on that. So Ian Scher from CNET was going to join me this afternoon, and then Fred said we're going to have someone that's going to pinch hit. So Joan Salzman is with me this afternoon. And I was kind of fumbling and bumbling there, Joan, because I could not find your name. And Fred had written it down, so I apologize. I'm like, wait a second, I can't remember who's coming on with me. It's a panic that, you know, basically kicks in if you're the host. But you are a senior reporter, tech and media with CNET. Thanks for pinch hitting for Ian, because he basically said, you know a lot about this stuff. Let me start with Disney Plus and your thoughts on that. And they did have some glitches this morning, didn't they?
Yeah, they definitely did. Disney Plus app, it launched very early Tuesday. It didn't have any problems until people started to wake up. And everybody had, there was a surge of demand to sign up and try it out. But what we're seeing now later in the day is that that demand has kind of chilled out, it's leveled out, and that's meant that the app isn't glitching out nearly as much as it had been at that very initial surge of interest point in the morning.
Is this a risky gamble for Disney or not? Now, look, they're going aggressively into the streaming market. They're going up against Netflix. Netflix spends a lot of money on great quality shows. They've spent $3 billion on technology and content here to take on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, if you will.
It's a huge risk for Disney, but I think what they see is that it's a bigger risk to sit on the sidelines when they can see that consumers are moving in this direction. They can see that streaming is the way that people are going to more and more prefer to get their content, and that watching things through a cable service or a satellite service, which is how Disney right now has made most of its profit via ESPN on cable, but that's just not going to last. So they're making a huge bet. It's a gigantic risk, but they think that the risk of the status quo is even greater.
All right, so they hooked me in with the Star Wars series, and I don't really know much about more of the original content. Obviously, the movies and the archive movies from Disney are appealing as well. Will there be enough new content that will appeal to people who are, you know, into binge-watching shows? I mean, there's a lot. Here's the thing. I just got Apple TV a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I had the actual Apple TV, but I'm talking about the new programming. I have Hulu and Amazon and HBO Go and Netflix and now this. There's just a lot to choose from. So I think it gets confusing for people that are making these decisions.
Yeah, and you know, most of the surveys that we see are that consumers have a limit between 3 and 5 of these services, and now that even more are launching, it's going to be even more difficult to decide which ones deserve to have your attention and to get your dollars. But you're definitely right, The Mandalorian is that big tentpole, flashy original that Disney Plus is banking on at the beginning, but it's going to, they're ramping up a really, really aggressive pipeline of content, of original exclusive things as they start to build up the service. But the benefit of it being Disney is they have that gigantic library of all the movies and all these old TV shows that everybody knows and loves already to lean back on in that in the meantime.
I mean,
Apple
just
doesn't have that.
Some people know, look, you're talking Disney, Pixar, Marvel, the 30 seasons of The Simpsons, Avatar, all these things are going to be up there for people to see. So let me kind of segue into password sharing. I heard this story last week. I think a lot of us do this. I have kids in Columbia, Missouri that use my passwords for some of the streaming services. I don't even know. I think Netflix may have a limit of 5 people that can sign on. But how are they going to crack down on this?
Well, what we've seen so far is that there's this tension for streaming companies. They know that people password share, and they know that means that they're losing potential, they're losing money. That's potential subscribers that could be paying for completely separate accounts. But they also know if they crack down on their consumers, they're going to ostracize them.
Yeah,
it's
right.
going to make people mad. So the way that they're dealing with it right now is they have, you mentioned it already, they have these simultaneous stream limits. Netflix has, it's tiered, depending on how much you play Netflix, you get more of those simultaneous streams. Disney's taking a different approach. They're giving you five, no matter, well, they only have one tier, so you get five whether or not you wanted to get more or you, for whatever reason, wanted to have less. And that's probably what we're going to see be the norm, especially at this time of ratcheting up competition. They're not going to be cracking down on consumers at the time that they're going to be desperate to hold on to them. Now, 3 years down the line,
right,
five
right.
years down the line, we'll see how things change.
Yeah, that's the thing, because you would, and I understand how they have to be careful here, because yeah, they can kind of hack people off and then maybe someone drops their subscription overall. But in the future, they're going to have to find a way to figure this out, right? And I don't know how you do it, because look, there are legitimate reasons for you to have a password for, if it's in the family, for example, if my kids want to use the service, they should be able to use the service, right?
Yeah, I think that where we're going to see a lot of the crackdowns on password sharing are with cable and satellite companies. You know, those are very expensive packages, and they don't have this sort of simultaneous stream standard that streaming companies like Netflix do. And in addition to that, you can use cable credentials to log into the streaming versions of a lot of networks. So if you are password sharing with a bunch of family members, a bunch of them can be getting HBO, and that's not going to be making AT&T and HBO very happy. I think we're going to see the crackdowns on that cable side much sooner than we're going to see it from the likes of Netflix or Disney.
How is this, and I have a fair amount of people that I know that have cut the cord. They don't have necessarily your traditional cable or DirecTV. I'm still stupid. Every month, John, I look at my DirecTV bill and I scratch my head. I'm like, why in the world do I pay this much? I convince myself that I sort of need it for my job. Plus, I have Sunday Ticket, which is, well, look, I immerse myself in pop culture and entertainment and sports and news, but I love football too, so I have the Sunday Ticket package. But the bottom line is they're trying to change the landscape of media, and we're all going to make decisions in the future that I think are going to be more a la carte. But will something with all Apple and now Disney force a bunch of people to say, I don't want the pay TV subscription?
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to be seeing cord cutting accelerate. It's already, some of the analysts that I follow are calling it a bloodshed. There are more than a million traditional pay TV subscribers just cut the cord in the last quarter, and it's expected to be even worse in the next quarter. It's only going to get more dramatic from here because there are all these other options that are so much easier and simpler. And, you know, you can argue if paying for internet service and multiple streaming services is actually a price competitive thing to cable, you know, that nickel and diming gets pretty high, but we're definitely going to be seeing a lot more cord cutting as time goes on.
Have you seen The Mandalorian or not?
I have. I watched the first episode very early this morning. It's pretty cool.
I was going to watch it this morning, but I couldn't get the damn thing to work, so I'm going to watch it tonight. Joan Salzman, CNET, senior reporter, tech and media. I am excited because that trailer looked really good. So thanks for coming on, explaining all this. Keep us posted about the password sharing.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joan.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Your spot for everything Redbirds this offseason is KMOX. From the hot stove show to the winter meetings in San Diego to winter warm-up, the Cardinal Caravan, then 2020 spring training in Jupiter. Your home for everything Cardinals is KMOX.
It's Chris Raby. He'll join us at 4:15 this afternoon as we get into Total Information PM. I am still stunned by the Northwestern story about the daily newspaper, the student newspaper up there. Basically, they're going to stop reporting. Well, I could just stop there. They're going to stop reporting, even though they're journalism students. But we'll get into that here in just a moment. Bernie Goldberg is with me this afternoon. You can find a lot of great stuff right now at BernardGoldberg.com. You see him on a variety of media, talking about the media sometimes. He's an Emmy Award-winning writer and journalist. He's also one of the correspondents on HBO's Real Sports. Bernie, welcome back. How are you?
I'm just fine, just fine. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm way, way behind on my HBO Real Sports viewing. So if you've had cool stories on there, unfortunately, I've not seen them.
My coolest work currently is appearing on my website, BernardGoldberg.com.
Then I haven't missed things, right? Let's talk about one of the columns that you posted yesterday. And even since I told Fred that I wanted to speak with you about what you wrote about Brian Stelter, we've had some other interesting journalistic quote-unquote news that came out of the Medill School of Journalism, or at least the paper that's up there at Northwestern, and we'll get to that. But look, you're a guy, and I've cited you. You've been a guest for many years, ever since you wrote that book, Bias. How many years? Was that 20 years, 20-plus years ago?
A little less than 20 years ago. It came out in 2001. The end of 2001, so that would be 18 years ago.
But think about it. It's almost daily, Bernie, that something goes on when it sort of reflects on media bias. And maybe it's not bias, maybe it's something else at play, and that's kind of what Brian Stelter was doing with the column that you sort of pointed out, his behavior relating to spelling errors on Twitter.
Yeah, I know. It's people who don't know about this are going to think I'm making this up.
I know, right?
But Brian Stelter, who I've compared to a potted plant when he does interviews with people he likes, he just sits there and nods his head and they can say anything they want. It's supposedly a media show, but it's about two things and only two things: bashing Donald Trump and bashing Fox News. Okay? He's right a lot of the times with his criticism. But he never bashes liberals in the media. So that's my complaint with Brian Stelter. Anyway, he recently ran a segment about all the spelling errors Donald Trump makes when he takes to Twitter. Really, all the spelling errors. He's made 188 spelling errors since he became president. We know, thanks to Brian Stelter, to which I say somebody ought to call Adam Schiff, because if this isn't grounds for impeachment, God knows, I don't know what is. This is what liberal journalists like Brian Stelter do. They don't just criticize Donald Trump for legitimate things. They criticize him for idiotic things like spelling errors when he tweets.
Well, yeah, not only that, here's why I think that's important. And I think we've all done this. Bernie, you tweet, I tweet. One of the things that I don't like about Twitter, and I think they've been encouraged to fix this, and they've never really done it, is there's no edit button on Twitter, right? So if you make a mistake, I'm pretty sure the president knows sometimes, because he tweets himself, that there might be a spelling error in there. But once you realize it, that thing has gotten a lot of attention, and it's hard to correct it. So Stelter points out, he said, and you write this in the column, he said, shoe biz instead of show biz, or hamburgers, or lightweight. I don't know, maybe he's doing some of this into Siri, too, and that would account for some of the spelling errors. But that became big news on CNN over the weekend.
Mark, here's my question to you and to the great people who are listening to us right now: who cares if he makes spelling errors? You want to criticize his tax policy? Fine. You want to criticize tariffs and how he's dealing with trade? Be my guest. But Brian Stelter actually pointed out that he confuses its, I-T apostrophe S, with its, I-T-S. Are you kidding me? Are you, excuse my language, freaking kidding me? This is insane. And you know, he's not the first to do this. The New York Times recently ran a page one story, which included information about how Donald Trump had a dangling modifier in one of his tweets. A dangling modifier, page one of the New York Times. Listen. If you need proof that liberals in the media are out to get this president, and full disclosure, I'm not a fan of his vile behavior.
Right, right. Nor am I. Right.
Right. But if you need proof that so-called journalists are out to get him, you say the New York Times is running a page one story that he has dangling modifiers. I don't even remember what a dangling modifier is. And Brian Stelter on CNN, who never criticizes CNN or MSNBC or the New York Times or the Washington Post, is doing a segment on spelling errors by the president of the United States on Twitter. That's all the proof you need that they're out to get the president.
Yeah, look, I think they have bought into the notion that Trump derangement syndrome brings viewers, so they're going to play to that. But I've had issues with this on different forums. So, you know, I don't know, and I try not to watch Saturday Night Live very much anymore because it's not funny, but when they did this monologue and Kate McKinnon, or the opening segment with Elizabeth Warren a couple of weeks ago, not only was it not funny, but there are so many things that you could make fun of, realistically, whether you're conservative or liberal with Elizabeth Warren, but they treat her with kid gloves, and it's not mean-spirited like it is with the president.
Exactly. And this is what happens when you live— I made this point 18 years ago in Bias. This is what happens when you live in a comfortable, liberal media elite bubble, whether the media is CNN or Saturday Night Live or the New York Times. It's all the same thing. They live in this bubble where you can go for a day, a week, a month, a year. You can go practically your whole life and not come into contact with an opinion you don't already agree with. Now, you said a few minutes ago or a minute ago that Brian Stelter is appealing to the Trump derangement syndrome part of his audience. You're exactly right. That's what they do. They validate the biases of their readers and their viewers. They don't, and Saturday Night Live is the same way, same thing. They don't want to make their audience think and say, well, wait, you know, there's another point of view on this. That's not what they do. They just validate the biases of their audience. They give them the red meat that they crave so that they'll come back for more. It's a business model. It's not a journalism model. It's CNN or MSNBC or Fox. It's a business model. And the business model is very, very simple. Give the audience what it wants, make them come back for more, and you'll keep making money.
Well, with Saturday Night Live, they're an entertainment show, so I think to a certain extent they get a pass. My concern there is that I think people do treat some of the things they see on SNL as news. But CNN is in a different category, and you can see example after example of some of these things, whether it's CNN, the New York Times, or elsewhere, from the Kavanaugh hearings last year to the Covington Catholic kids to the, you know, whatever rape allegations come out against somebody in the Me Too moment. There simply isn't complete reporting, something that I was trained to do, something that you were trained to do in journalism.
They'll always, here's what it comes down to in one sentence, Mark. They'll always salivate more when going after a conservative Republican than a liberal Democrat. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Look, it's there's no doubt about that. All right. So then we get to the Northwestern University. I'm a proud graduate of the University of Missouri Journalism School. I've battled back and forth with friends who have gone to Northwestern or Syracuse about the superiority of my J school over theirs. Now I don't think there's much argument, because those of you who went to Northwestern should be ashamed of your university after it's the Medill School of Journalism, one of the best programs in the country. The student newspaper there, the Daily Northwestern, which is not part of the program, it's a student-run newspaper, though, at the school, will no longer report on campus events if they are going to offend the snowflakes. They had Jeff Sessions that came to speak on campus at a College Republicans event, and here's what they wrote. The Daily sent a reporter to cover that talk and another to cover the students protesting his invitation, along with a photographer. We recognize that we contributed to the harm students experience, and we wanted to apologize for and address the mistakes that we made that night, along with how we plan to move forward. Absolutely stunning.
Hey, what they said, again, I thought this was a joke when I first heard it.
Yes.
What they said, in essence, was, we are apologizing because we committed journalism. We're apologizing because we practice what journalists are supposed to do, cover an event. I was writing a column about this just seconds before our conversation, Mark. Let me read you the lead.
Yes, please.
And the 2019 award for the most pathetic example of sniveling journalism in a college newspaper goes to the Daily Northwestern, a publication staffed, ironically, by members of one of the most prestigious journalism schools in America. I mean, they're apologizing for covering the news because, this is important, because some students were disruptive. They tried to shout down sessions and break into the venue. And on Northwestern's campus, you can get in trouble for that. I don't know what the trouble you can get into is, but they don't tolerate that, supposedly. At least on paper, they don't tolerate that. So the editors of the Northwestern Daily were apologizing because we showed pictures of students trying to disrupt the event, and they might get into trouble. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you know, the way to keep out of trouble is don't participate in protests. If you don't want to be caught on camera, right? That's the way to do that.
Yeah, and they're apologizing because activists were complaining about their coverage. Bulletin, activists always complain about coverage. That doesn't make them look good.
The only thing that's encouraging about the response to this is I've seen plenty of liberals out there that have hammered this whole thing with this newspaper as well. So I guess...
Here's
there's people that see the ill here.
Yeah. That's the good news. Here's the bad news. They're not going to be little kids on college campuses forever. They're going to be working in radio, in television, in newspapers, online. They're going to be covering stories and telling you what happened. And if they show this kind of bias, and let's be clear, it's a liberal bias. It's a snowflake bias, a cupcake bias. If they're going to show that kind of bias now, let's hope a grown-up tells them we don't tolerate that here at the New York Times or the Washington Post. But the New York Times is the paper that ran the page one story about Donald Trump's grave offense of dangling a modifier. So, listen, people often ask me, Mark, you know, what's the future look like? I don't have a crystal ball, but I don't have a lot of faith in journalism schools on college campuses, because if they're producing kids like this, it's worse than I thought.
Yeah, I think it's pretty sad. That's how I tweeted it out this morning. Bernie Goldberg, you can find out all the content at bernardgoldberg.com. Bernie, always great to have you on. I appreciate it. Hope all is well.
Can I take 10 more seconds
Absolutely.
To say one thing? It's about my website. Look, I'd love all your listeners to come and join the website and read the stuff. But I want to make something clear. I am not one of those people who only tells you what you already know, who only gives you opinions you already agree with. So if that's the kind of thing you want, and I understand that, that's the kind of thing people who watch Hannity want. They want someone who only agrees, you know, with what they already believe. I don't want to waste your time. My website, bernardgoldberg.com, is not for you. Sometimes I take on the media. Sometimes I take on the president. But I will not pander to you. I have more respect for my readers. I won't pander. I won't tell them what they already believe.
And I appreciate that, and that's why one of the reasons I'm a big fan of yours. So, Bernie, always great, like I said. I appreciate coming on here this afternoon, even though there is no hope for the future of journalism. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Mark.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. I want to apologize in advance, ladies and gentlemen, but this is disgusting. It's very, very gross, and again, I apologize, but... The bottom line here is this is interesting from a variety of perspectives, and I want you to hear the story even though it's gross.
Just steps away from the Hollywood Walk of Fame, a horrifying random attack.
A homeless man dumped a bucket of stuff on your head.
A bucket of his diarrhea. I didn't want it to be in my mouth, but it was running down my eyes. It's so traumatic.
Heidi Van Tassel was walking to her car near Hollywood's Walk of Fame when, according to police and court records, a transient with schizophrenia and psychotic disorders dumped feces all over her.
A bucket of his diarrhea. It was liquid, hot liquid. I was soaked, and I couldn't see. It was coming off of my eyelashes. Into my eyes.
Paramedics rushed her to the hospital, and she now needs to be tested for infectious diseases every 3 months.
It's something I won't ever forget. It was disgusting.
Okay, outside of being disgusting, it's very disgusting. I was gagging a little bit listening to the story. Get this. Here's the kicker, ladies and gentlemen. The guy gets put into custody for a couple of months and then released. He's back out on the streets. There's nothing, because they were going to hold him for trial. They said, oh, he's not fit for trial. He's mentally unstable. So they put him in a facility. 2 months later, he's out again. Unbelievable. That's your audio cut of the day, and I'm sorry. I really am sorry.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.